Section 5. Common Misconceptions Regarding Economic Issues. We come to the first of these misconceptions, and that is, Islam has an economic system. Most people think that Islam provides us with a complete economic system, and the only thing needed is its implementation in favorable circumstances. This notion is not correct. It needs to be appreciated that man has been blessed with the faculty of intellect and reason, and has also been blessed with innate guidance regarding good and evil. In the affairs of life, his intellect and innate guidance are generally enough to guide him and show him the way. It is only at certain crossroads that he needs divine guidance to choose the right way. Consequently, in all such affairs, a detailed system of directives has not been divinely revealed to guide mankind. Only a broad outline has been given in the form of a set of rules and regulations which must be adhered to. Bearing this in mind, intellect and reason must evolve a system suited to the requirements and needs of a society. Since these requirements vary from time and place, the resulting systems will also vary accordingly. However, these systems shall be based on the same set of rules and regulations. In other words, the Sharia, which is a divine set of rules and regulations, is divine and therefore eternal, but the system evolved upon this Sharia is a human inference and therefore flexible. This flexibility obviously has been left to accommodate changing circumstances and evolutionary developments of human societies. Therefore, instead of extracting an economic system from the Quran and Sunnah, which of course does not exist, all-out efforts should be made by Muslim scholars to derive the economic Sharia of Islam. The task of formulating a system on its basis should be left to the economists and to those who understand the intricacies of this field. We now come to the second misconception, and that is, interest is analogous to rent. There are people who justify the charging of interest by saying that it is money charged for the amount lent, and in this way is like the rent of a commodity. In other words, they contend that just as a person pays rent for using a house, he pays rent for using money borrowed. And this rent for money borrowed is interest. Thus, if charging rent is allowed, then interest should also be allowed. An analysis of this argument shows that the analogy drawn is not correct. Rent is the money charged on commodities which are used and not used up. These commodities remain intact and do not have to be recreated when they are required back. They only need to be handed back to their owner. Thus, while a house which is rented is used such that it remains intact, money which is borrowed is used up and it does not remain intact. It is consumed on whatever it was borrowed for. In order to return the borrowed money, it needs to be recreated or reproduced, and some money over and above the borrowed amount too needs to be produced to pay back as interest. Technically, it can be said that interest is charged on circulating capital, whereas rent is charged on fixed capital. We now come to the third misconception, and that is, interest can be charged for a noble cause. Some people are of the view that money should be invested in interest-based schemes so that the interest earned can be spent on welfare projects and philanthropic ventures. It needs to be appreciated that taking interest is forbidden in Islam, even if it is taken for a noble cause. Islam requires that both the means and the objective of an enterprise be morally justified. It does not condone the Robin Hood concept of achieving noble objectives through ignoble means. Its objective is to purify a person's concepts and his deeds from any semblance of evil. Its message is to strive in the right direction, whether the objective is achieved or not. For achieving an objective depends not on a person's efforts, it depends on the will of God. It is not our obligation by any means to spend money on philanthropic causes when we do not have it from the right means. An example from the Quran, as elaborated by Amin Asin Islahi in his Tafsir Tadabbur al-Quran, may help in illustrating this point. Gambling and drinking in pre-Islamic times were a means through which the rich showed their generosity and helped the poor and needy. In winters, when cold winds blew and caused conditions akin to drought, the courageous would gather at various places, drink liquor, and in their state of inebriation, slaughtered any camels that they could get hold of. They would pay the owner of the camels whatever price he demanded. They would then gamble on the meat of the slaughtered camels. Whatever parts of meat a person won in this gambling, he would generously distribute them among the poor who would gather round on such occasions. In pre-Islamic Arabia, this was a matter of great honor, and people who took part in this activity were considered very philanthropic and generous. The poets would narrate the accounts of their benevolence in their odes. On the other hand, people who stayed away from this activity would be called barm, which means stingy. It was this very benefit of drinking and gambling which prompted people to make an inquiry when they were regarded as prohibited items. The Quran asserted in its reply that in spite of serving this noble cause, they were instrumental in producing moral misconduct in an individual, which in no case can be allowed. The Quran states, يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الْخَمْرِ وَالْمَيْسِرِ قُلْ فِيهِمَا إِثْمٌ كَبِيرٌ وَمَنَافِعُ لِلنَّاسِ وَإِثْمُهُمَا أَكْبَرُ مِنْ نَفْعِهِمَا. They ask you about liquor and gambling. Tell them, there is great sin in them, and some profits as well for people, but their sin is greater than their profit. Surah number 2, verse 219. In other words, despite having utility, drinking and gambling were prohibited since they caused moral misconduct. Therefore, one should not invest money in interest-based schemes, even if the purpose is to spend the accrued money for some noble cause. We now come to the fourth misconception, and that is, commercial interest is not forbidden in Islam. There are people who think that interest charged on ventures which are commercial in nature is not forbidden. While clarifying this misconception, Javed Ahmed Ghamidi writes, "It should remain clear that whether a loan is acquired for personal, business or welfare purposes, the real meaning of riba is not ascertained on these bases. It is an indisputable fact that in the Arabic language, the word riba, irrespective of the aim of the lender and the condition of the borrower, just implies a predetermined increase acquired on a loan. Consequently, the Quran itself has clarified this fact. During its own period of revelation, lending on interest for business purposes was quite rampant, and these loans were given with the intention of prospering through the wealth of others. The Quran states, مَا آتَيْتُم مِّن رِبًا لِيَرْبُوَ فِي أَمْوَالِ النَّاسِ فَلَا يَرْبُوَ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ وَمَا آتَيْتُم مِّن زَكَاةٍ تُرِيدُونَ وَجْهَ اللَّهِ فَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُضْعِفُونَ. That which you give as loan on interest, that it may increase on other people's wealth, it has no increase with God. But that which you give as zakah, seeking God's countenance, it is these people who shall get manifold in the hereafter of what they gave. Surah number 30, verse 39. The expression, that it may increase on other people's wealth, is not only inappropriate for application to interest-based loans given to the poor for their personal use, but is also clearly indicative of the fact that interest-based loans were generally given for business purposes, and in this way, they increased on other people's wealth, according to the Quran. It is to this fact that the following verse also points. وَإِنْ كَانَ ذُو عُسْرَةٍ فَنَزِرَةٌ إِلَى مَيْسَرَةٍ وَأَنْتَصَدَّقُوا فَهُوَ خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ إِن كُنْتُمْ تَعْلَمُونَ. And if the borrower is in difficulty, grant him respite until it is easy for him to repay. And if you write off this debt, it is better for you if you only knew. Surah number 2, verse 218. Amin Ehsan Islahi comments on this verse in the following words. Today some naive people claim that the type of interest that prevailed in Arabia before the advent of Islam was usury. The poor and the destitute had no option but to borrow money from a few rich moneylenders to fulfill their personal needs. These moneylenders exploited the poor and would lend them money at high interest rates. It is only this type of interest which the Quran has termed as riba and forbidden. As far as commercial interest is concerned, it neither existed at that time nor did the Quran prohibit it. The verse categorically refutes this view. When the Quran says that if the borrower is in difficulty, he should be given respite until he is able to pay back his debt, it clearly points out that in those times, even the rich used to acquire loans. In fact, if the style and stress of the verse are correctly understood, it becomes clear that it was mostly the rich who used to procure loans. Indeed, there was a strong chance that the borrower would find himself in difficulty even to pay the original amount. The moneylender, therefore, is directed to give him more time, and if he forgoes the original amount, it would be better for him. The words of this verse strongly indicate this meaning. The actual words of the verse are, وَإِنْ كَانَ ذُو عُسْرَةٍ فَنَزِرَةٌ إِلَى مَيْسَرَةٍ. The particle of condition in or if is not used for general circumstances, but in fact is used for rare and unusual circumstances. For general circumstances, the particle izhar is used. In the light of this, it is clear that the borrowers in those times were generally the affluent or zumaisara, but in some cases were poor or had become poor after acquiring the loan, and in that case, the Quran has directed the moneylenders to give them a time rebate. Amin Hasan Islahi, Tadabbur al-Quran, Volume 1, pages 638 to 639. He has concluded this discussion by saying, obviously the affluent would have turned to the moneylenders not to fulfill their personal needs, but of course their business needs. So what is the difference between those loans and the commercial loans of today? Amin Hasan Islahi, Tadabbur al-Quran, Volume 1, page 639. We now come to the fifth misconception, and that is, interest can be taken from non-Muslims. It is believed by some scholars that interest can be charged from non-Muslims. It needs to be appreciated that taking interest is prohibited from a human being, whether he is a Muslim or a non-Muslim, because of the fact that it is inherently an unethical contract. Things which are unethical are prohibited whether they relate to Muslims or to non-Muslims. In other words, just as one should be honest not only with Muslims but also with non-Muslims, similarly, one should also not be selective on the basis of religion in taking interest. Those who justify this practice refer to a hadith, as per which Makhul reported from the Prophet, "There is no interest between Muslims and people with whom they are at war." It should be noted that this hadith is mursal, or it is not sound, and is also not found in the six major books of hadith. Its content also contradicts the Quran.